Okay.
All right, so I want to talk tonight a little bit about the wedding day. There's a lot of different minhagim, obviously, halachos and minhagim, about the wedding day. In particular, we'll talk about the halachos, you know, kind of leading up to the wedding, and maybe just the very beginning of the, you know, of the actual wedding ceremony. And then maybe next time, you know, we'll talk about the chuppah and some of the halachos and minhagim that that pertain to the chuppah. So the first interesting minhag that pertains to the wedding day is the custom that the chasan and the kala have of fasting the day of the wedding. So it's a very commonly known custom. It is a custom. It does not appear anywhere in Mishnah, Gemara, you know, none of those primary sources. But already in the times of the Rishonim, this custom is already mentioned. If you look at source number one, this is a Sefer Rokeach, lived in the 1100s, 1200s. So in his halachos, where he discusses the halachos of getting married, so he already writes, Mashemis anin hachasanim ad la'achar habracha. He says the fact that the chasanim fast, he only mentions chasanim, interestingly enough, but we'll see that obviously our custom is that the kalas also fast, but he mentions chasanim, that they fast until after the bracha, until after the sheva brachos. Matzasi ba'agada. He said, I found in the agada an explanation of why they fast. Mipnei she mitzvah chaviva aleihem. Because the mitzvah of getting married is so beloved to them. They're so excited about getting married. Kederach she'osin chasidim harishonim, shayu mis'anin al mitzvah ha'chavilo kigon lulav u'sha'ar devarim. An amazing thing. But he says that the chasidim harishonim, the original pious people, they used to fast. Anytime they did a mitzvah that was especially chaviv to them, they would fast. They would fast as a sign of the chavivus of the mitzvah, of the, you know, how much they love that mitzvah. You know, lulav, they would fast in honor of the mitzvah of lulav. To us, that sounds like, you know, crazy. Someone would, you know, if we're happy, we eat, right? But, in, you know, in the Hasidim Harishonim, if they were excited about something, to show their excitement about the mitzvah, they would fast, you know, to show, I guess, to focus on the spirituality and not the physical aspect. But this is, so he says that's the this is the original, you know, this is the original reason, he says, because the mitzvah is so chaviv to the chasan. Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that. I don't know. Maybe Chol HaMoed. I don't know. Not sure. Maybe Erev Sukkos. When they bought it, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're so busy, you know, looking for Lulav HaNesrik they didn't eat. But the Mara Mintz, also one of the Rishonim in his Shalas Tshuvas in source number two. So he mentions already that the that the minhag is that the Kala also fasts. V'nagu achasan v'hakala. And he brings two additional reasons for this custom to fast. Not just that the mitzvah is chaviv, but he says, Yesh omrim hatam, some explain the reason, to hu yom slicha. He says, some say that it's a day of atonement for the chasan and kala. The yadua shenim chalu avanoseihem. We know that on the day of the wedding, their sins are forgiven. The yom kippur didhu. It's their own personal yom kippur. Based on the pasuk in Bereishis Perek Chavches, Vayikach es Machlas. So we'll see that in a minute. But Vayikach es Machlas, the idea of Machlas being, we'll see in source number five, Yerushalmi also references this from the language of Mechila, right? The language of Mechila, of atoning for our sins. So one reason that they fast is because it's their own personal Yom Kippur. The day of the wedding is a day of Slicha and Kapara. V'yesh omrim hatam, he says an additional reason, shetzrichem lihis'anos, shema yishtakru. We don't want them to be drunk coming into the wedding. Now obviously when people used to drink a lot more, you know, in terms of intoxicating beverages, people didn't have, you know, clean water to drink and, you know, and soda and Snapple and things like that. They used to drink beer. They used to drink things that were intoxicating. Maybe they had a higher tolerance, but, you know, but at some point they also would become intoxicated. So we didn't want to risk the chasan or the kala being intoxicated at the wedding, because if the chasan says, you know, he does the kiddushin intoxicated, it's not going to be a valid kiddushin. So in order to avoid any problems, so we don't allow them to eat or drink anything the day of the wedding. A very interesting nafkamina, right? A very interesting practical difference between these two reasons. If the reason is because of slicha and kapara, it's their own personal Yom Kippur, or if the reason is because of intoxication. So the Aruch HaShulchan discusses the following two questions. Well, what happens if the chuppah is an early chuppah, right? So let's say the chuppah is you're making a Sunday wedding, and the chuppah is at 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So the chuppah is going to be done well before Tzeisa Kochavin, right? The day's not over. So if you say that the reason why they fast is because it's their own personal Yom Kippur, right, and they're getting an atonement for their sins, so maybe you can make the argument that they should fast, they should have to fast until Tzeisa Kochavin. They can't eat right after the chuppah. And everybody else can sit down and have the salad and the soup and whatever, but they have to wait until the day is over. It's their Yom Kippur, right? Just because the chuppah happened doesn't mean the Yom Kippur is over, right? It's their own personal Yom Kippur. But if you say that the reason is because of a suspicion, we were concerned that maybe they're going to be drunk at the chuppah. So once the chuppah is over, so now they can, you know, eat, drink, and be merry. Let them do whatever they want. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, you know, this would be a nafka mina for those two reasons. And the same thing, he says, the same thing would apply. Let's say the chuppah is going to be after Tzeisa Kochavim. Right? So let's say it starts even, right? It starts before and it's going to carry on till after, or whatever the case is. Do you have to fast until after the chuppah? Or can I eat right after Tzeisa Kochavim? Right? So again, if you say that it's Yom Kippur, it's their Yom Kippur, so as soon as Tzeisa Kochavim comes, Yom Kippur's over, I can eat. But if you say that it's based on the, you know, not being drunk under the chuppah, I have to wait until the chuppah's over. So he writes, in source number 3, I'm skipping the first line, we'll come back to it in a minute, but in the second line, after the three dots, he writes, V'haminag pashut, dima chuppah mi ba'odyom, sha'ochlin v'shosin achar ha'chuppah ha'chasam ve'akala. He says, the accepted custom is that if the chuppah happens, it's a Sunday wedding, and the chuppah happens during the day, we don't make them fast until Tzeisa Kochavim. As we know, the chasen and kala can eat right after the chuppah. Ulefizin nira detafsu tam hasheni leikar. So it seems that we're siding with the second reason, that the real reason why we fast is really to prevent any potential drunkenness at the chuppah. He says so too. We see the same thing, that from the fact that when the chuppah carries on several hours into the night, we do fast until the chuppah is over. Right? We don't just say, oh, okay, it's Tzeisa Kochavim now, so now we can break our fast. No, we fast until the chuppah is over. Right? Why? Because it seems that the main reason is really this suspicion that we don't want them to be drunk at the wedding. At the chuppah. Ulatama rishon, he says, right, according to the first reason, as soon as Tzeisa Kochavim hits, they should be able to break their fast. So very interesting nafka mina based on these two, you know, potential reasons for fasting. He does mention, very interestingly, that he says, you know, according to the logic, that it is a day of atonement, right, that this is a Yom Slicha V'Kapara for the Chasan and the Kala. He says it's also a day for tefillah. Right, Yom Kippur, we spend the whole day davening. So he says it's a day for tefillah, they should be davening. What should they be davening about? If you look back at the first line of source number 3, he says, V'kevan shehu yom slicha, meharo'i lihis'anos ulevakesh rachamim, right, they should fast and daven, sheyichye chaye shalva imbas zugo, number 1, that they should live a life of peace, they should have shalom bayis. Right, what better time to daven for shalom bayis than the day of the wedding, which is like our yom, personal Yom Kippur, daven for shalom bayis, and that they should have children who are wonderful children that are pleasing in the eyes of other people and the eyes of God. So these are the things that the Chas and Kala should be focused on. You know, listen, it's an important day, and it's a nerve-wracking day for them, and sometimes they're distracted by their suit or their dress or their hair or the pictures or whatever. But you know, they should be thinking also about these things. You know, shalom bayis. And the Emirat Hashem, the children that should come at the right time.
Question.
Yeah.
Well, what if they get married on Rosh Chodesh or on Hanukkah?
Good. So there are days. I didn't want to bring the sources. There are days. There are sources that discuss all of the days that you don't fast. There are days that you know, certain days. Many Rosh Chodeshim. There are some Rosh Chodesh that you do fast. But in general, Rosh Chodesh and other days like that, if you get married on those days, you would not fast. So, you know, but there are differences. You know, so certain sources say that these days you do fast and these days you don't fast. So it gets a little bit complex in terms of the actual days. But you're right, there are a whole chunk of days where there's an isser to fast, and therefore Chasan Kala would not fast on those days.
I mean, I understand the proof that they're trying to say the drunkenness is the main reason why we don't do it, because of the not fasting after.
Right.
It would seem that the Yom Kippur one makes a little bit more sense, because for other mitzvahs, you don't tell people not to eat because you're in danger. You're going to be drunk.
Right, although...
I mean some of them.
Right, I mean...
You know, you say don't meet before you go to shul, because, you know, you'll be drunk while you're davening.
Correct, even though there is an issur to daven while you're drunk.
Right.
Birkas Kohanim. Right, Birkas Kohanim, we do have that. Right, Birkas Kohanim, we have that. And that's why in Simchas Torah we bump Birkas Kohanim up to Shacharis, because people are making Kiddush. So, you know, we have that idea. When it comes to davening in general, you're right, we don't say that you're not allowed to eat, you know, you can't eat anything the whole day because mincha, maybe you'll come to mincha drunk. You know, we don't say that. But that's also a little, maybe perhaps a little too difficult. You're davening every day, three times a day. So what are we going to say? You can't eat, you know, I mean, you have to eat.
Right.
You have to eat and drink.
That's
so.
That's why I think it would make more sense, the Yom Kippur thing.
Yeah, I hear you.
If I'm getting married at night, you have to say something.
Right.
Why am I fasting the day before?
So, right.
Logic would say that
right.
I'm going to be drunk.
So, right. So if you're saying that the chuppah is not starting until the nighttime, then you're right. If it's Yom Kippur, so the next day should be Yom Kippur, right? Meaning that today's not Yom Kippur, today's Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to eat, right? You know? So you're right. So that I think that's exactly what he's saying. Okay. In terms of the idea for a second of the day of the chasana being a personal Yom Kippur, it's very interesting. The Kobo brings a medrash in Shir HaShirim based on the pasuk of Tze'ena Ure'ena Benos Tzion Bamelach Shlomo Ba'atara She'itra Lo Imo B'yom Chasunos V'yom Simchas Liba, one of the more famous psukim in Shir HaShirim. And the pasuk refers to these two things. Excuse me, B'yom Chasunoso, the day of his wedding, U'B'yom Simchas Libo, the day of the joy of his heart. So what are we referring to here? And Chazal have all sorts of different hints. I mean, as we know, Shir HaShirim is, you know, completely allegorical. And they have all sorts of remazim and different hints as to, you know, what these two things are referring to. And one of them, the Medrash says, Klomar, She'yom HaKippurim Nikra Yom Simcha. Right? Yom Kippur is referred to as a Yom Simcha. We're actually referring to Yom Kippur here. Kemo she'amru b'yom chasunoso, zu matan Torah. What's b'yom chasunoso? B'yom chasunoso refers to the day of matan Torah. Why is matan Torah referred to as a chasana? She'nischatin HaKadosh Baruch Hu im Yisrael. B'yom she'amar har Sinai. Right? Because we got married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that day. We got the Torah, that's like the ksuba, that's our marriage contract. We got married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the day of matan Torah. And he writes that when they stood at har Sinai, hayu kemo ha'erusin. We know that a Jewish wedding is comprised of two parts. The Erusin, which is when the chasan gives the kal of the ring and says, Harei at Mekudeshasli, that's the betrothal. And then the Nisuin, which is the Sheva Brachos under the Chuppah. Those are the two components of the wedding. So he says that Matan Torah was like the Erusin. V'yom HaKippurim, Hayu Kemo HaNisuin. Yom Kippur is like the Nisuin. So we see this connection between Yom Kippur and Nisuin, Yom Kippur and a wedding, that really, you know, vis-a-vis us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu already, that we're referring to Yom Kippur as the day of the wedding. The Yerushalmi also, as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, mentions based on the pasuk that Esav took Machlas Basi Shmuel as a wife. So the Yerushalmi challenges that her name was not Machlas; her name was actually Basmas. If you look at other pasukim, it's clear that her name was not Machlas. So why are we referring to her as Machlas? This was a good deal for Esav, right? He got married, he got all of his sins wiped clean. So again, it's the day that all of our sins are wiped clean. The Gemara in Yevamos also in source number 6, same idea. Kevan shenasa adam isha avonosav mispakikin. That as soon as a person gets married to a woman, so and obviously this is for the man and the woman, their sins are you know, mispakikin is like from a language of almost like plucking them out. You know, their sins are plucked from them. You know, no more sins. You know, again, I think the idea here is that when a chassan and kala get married, this is a new beginning. It's a new start. And, you know, as we discussed on several occasions, a marriage is not just a physical, you know, way of living together, but it's a spiritual growth dynamic as well. You know, the chassan and the kala, the husband and wife, are, you know, helping each other grow. And, you know, we discussed on Shabbos critiquing one another in a healthy, constructive way. But they're really helping each other grow into better people and better Jews. So this is, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, I'm giving everybody a fresh start. You guys are going to be together. It's going to be a whole new, qualitatively new spiritual life for the two of you. Let's get off to a new start. Interestingly, the Mahari Bruna, from the times of the Rishonim, in the Tshuva, so he writes another idea that he says, we know that Chazal tell us a Chasan is Domel HaMelech. Chasan is Domel HaMelech. Chasan is like a king. So he says that the Yerushalmi tells us in Rosh Hashanah that a king is judged each and every day. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't only judge a king once a year. Kadosh Baruch Hu judges a king each and every day. Because of his lofty position, a lot of it is expected of him. And Kadosh Baruch Hu judges him each and every day. So therefore, since the chasen is Dom HaMelech, and a melech is judged every day, so now for the chasen, this is his judgment day. Right? This is his judgment day, and that's perhaps also why he has to fast. And finally, it's interesting, at the end, he quotes another Gemara that says that less leka ksuba de loramu batigra, right? Something that, unfortunately we know all too well, that there's no wedding where there's no strife, right? You're always going to have some level of machlokes at a wedding. You know, some dispute between the two sides. There's going to be some level of machlokes, hopefully not too much, hopefully it'll be minor, but you're always going to have something. Leka ksuba de loramu batigra, it's a Gemara already, right? This is not a new phenomenon. Interestingly, one of my rebbeim, I can't remember if I told the story here once. One of my rebbeim said that we'll talk about maybe next week. We'll talk about it. The chuppah. There's different minhagim how you walk the chasan and the kala down. So many of us have the minhag that the father and the mother walk their child down. In some communities they have the minhag that the two fathers walk the chasan and the two mothers walk the kala. There's a minhag in some communities like that. So my rebbe told me the story. He said, I can't remember the names now, but there were two gedolim who were, marrying their children. Their children were getting married, and they had opposing customs in this regard. One of them had the custom that father and mother walked their child down, and one of them had the custom that the two fathers and the two mothers. So what did they do? So they fought. What did they fight? They fought that the other one's minhag should prevail. And each one was saying, no, let's do your minhag. So they were fighting that they should do the other person's minhag. So that's the type of machlokas that we would like. No, obviously not always so practical, but that's the type of machlokas. So the Ma'ari Bruna says at the end of this paragraph here in source number 7, he says, based on this fact of leka ksuba de lo roma batigra, so he says, imken at the last line, kach nigzera be gzera de nefila be puranus, that there's some gzera, that there's going to be some puranus, some negativity surrounding this wedding, lefichach misane levatel hapuranus. So he says that really the tainus is actually to combat this negativity that's in the air. You know, the strife that's between the families, which could lead to, machlokas, we know, never ends up with a good result. Machlokas could lead to something really negative happening. So in order to dispel any of that negativity, that's why the chasan and the kala fast. It's an interesting perspective. That, because of this, because of these challenges and the machlokas that might arise, the chasan and kala have to fast the day of the wedding.
Question.
Yeah.
Is the kala ever likened to a malka?
We assume that it's kind of the same, but I'm not sure in terms of the sources. I'm not 100% sure if there are sources like that. But we kind of just assume that it's the same idea. Chasan Dom HaMelech and Kala Dom HaMalka. Now, one thing that's very important is that we mentioned when we began the shir that this custom of fasting is a custom, and it's not mentioned in any Gemara, any Mishnayos, and therefore there are situations where a Rav will be Mekel and say that a couple or one of the parties does not have to fast. So for example, sometimes you have people who just get sick. Every time they fast, they get sick. So Yom Kippur, what are you going to do? You have to fast. It's Midoraisa. But when it comes to something like this, where it's only a minhag, if it's going to make them sick, and literally, then they're not going to be able to be at the wedding, or they're going to be really sick from fasting. So then very often, the Rav will be Mekel, because, after all, it's a minhag. Again, minhagim, we don't just do away with minhagim for no reason. But if you have a reason, this minhag is really going to mess things up, so then there's reason, there is room to be Mekel. Sometimes, Rabbanim will say fast half a day. If the wedding is, depending on what time the wedding is, if the wedding's late at night, maybe fast half a day. You fast for a few hours and don't fast the whole thing. But that depends on the person, depends on where they're holding. Again, assuming all things, all things being equal, and the person can fast well, so it is a well established, as we've seen, it's a well established minhag, and we do try to fast. But in cases of necessity, there certainly is some room for leniency. I've been to weddings where the chasan or the kala were not there. Were not there for the dancing because they were so sick. They weren't feeling well. Now I was at a wedding once where they had to call Hatzalah for the, you know, because they fasted the whole day and then they drank and then they're dancing and it's, you know, and they have to call Hatzalah for, you know, for the chasen or the kala. So obviously we want to avoid that type of situation. That's not the type of thing that we want at the wedding. That's not what Chazal had in mind. That's not what the minhag had in mind. And therefore, the minhag was never in such a situation where a person was going to get sick from fasting. But assuming a person's a good faster, so then, you know, or an okay faster, so this is the a well-established minhag. You know, another eitz is that if you're not such a good faster, make an early chuppah. You know, do a chuppah at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, and then you don't have to fast so much. Yeah.
The fast begins in the morning.
Yes.
But now, if it's compared to Yom Slicha, like Yom Kippur, it should start the night before.
Very good, right. Yeah, we are Rachmanas on the Chasen Kala. It's like Yom Kippur. It's not really Yom Kippur. Yeah, exactly. It's like Yom Kippur. Okay. Another interesting custom is that we know that the Chasen and the Kala, which is related to this, the Chasen and the Kala do vidui when they daven on the day of the Chasen. And again, this is mentioned in early sources. Again, all these things, many of these things are minhagim. You know, when it comes to these different customs that we have on the day of the wedding, the Pischei Tshuva in Evan Ha'ezer, in source number 8, mentions this in the name of a sefer, Kerem Shlomo. He says, Noagin, Sha'achosan vispalo b'mincha achar tfilas yudches kodem sh'akaras raglav kol seder ha'vidui kiderach shemispalin b'yom ha'kippurim. Like just like on Yom Kippur, we say vidui at the end of Shmona Esrei, right? So the chosan and the kala say vidui also at the end of their Shmona Esrei. The reason why they say vidui, again, is that since this is a Yom Slicha V'Kapara, right? The Vidui obviously has nothing to do with getting drunk. Vidui is clearly because it's a Yom Slicha V'Kapara for them, and because of that, so they have the practice to say Vidui. It is interesting that I remember when I got married, my Rav told me, he said, you don't have to say Vidui at Mincha. You know, many people have the Minhag that they say Vidui at Mincha. Sometimes it's not so practical, because sometimes at a wedding, you know, you're davening, you know, very often they daven mincha at the chasen's tish, and vidui is a nice long chunk, and especially if the person wants, the chasen, the kala, want to say vidui with kavada, you know, that they could be there, you know, the Shmona Esrei could take a little while. So they're going to hold everybody up at the chasen's tish, everybody's going to be done, and the chasen's still going, you know, knocking away over there by the wall, clapping al chait, and meanwhile everybody's waiting around. So that's why sometimes he said it's better for the chasen and the kala to do vidui at shacharis. You know, when it's already, it's a little quieter, they're not holding anybody up, they can take their time, and they can do vidui. There's no mitzvah that you have to do vidui specifically at mincha. Many people have the custom to do it at mincha, but it's not necessary. It's interesting, we have generally when a person, when an individual fasts, so the halacha is that they have to in the day before, at the mincha, before that fast, they recite a small formula in Shmona Esrei, at the end of Shmona Esrei, which is a Kabbalah's Tainus, which is an acceptance of the fast the next day. If you look in any article sitter, you look at in Mincha at the end of Shmona Esrei, you'll see there's a little gray box. Most of us just gloss over it. Because
you say anytime you want to fast.
Anytime. You want to fast tomorrow, you know, I mean, you want to fast, you know, 2 days, tomorrow at Mincha, you could say a Kabbalah's Tainus. People who fast for a Yahrzeit, for example, so they're supposed to be Mekabel the Tainus the day before in this in the Shmona Esrei, this little formula. So interestingly, if you turn to the next side, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that when it comes to this tainus of the day of the wedding, he says ve'ein tzarich kabbalas tainus b'mincha shelafanov. He said it's not necessary to accept this fast in advance the way that we do other fast days. Why? Kevan shekulam nahagu kein. So he says because it's interesting. Even though this is an individual fast. Right, I'm fasting today because I'm getting married. Nobody else is fasting here because nobody else is getting married. But at the same time, since this is an accepted custom, it's an accepted and well-established custom, so it's not considered a tanis yachid. It's not considered an individual fast. An individual fast is because, you know, what I have yahrzeit, so I'm fasting today. You know, or I have a particular reason, so I'm fasting today. But since the day of the wedding is a universal custom to fast, even though the yahrzeit fast also used to be more universal, certainly today it's not. But the day of the wedding is a universal fast. Everybody fasts that day, so you don't have to be makabel the tainus. It's an automatic tainus. Yeah.
What happens if it's one of those days that you don't fast? So you still say the vidui?
Yeah, vidui you still say because vidui is not dependent on the fasting. Yeah, vidui is just it's still a Yom Kippur for you. It's just a Yom Kippur that you can eat. You know, it's a nice Yom Kippur. But yeah, you still say the vidui. Okay, we're not going to read it inside, but if you look at source number 10, I brought the Chachmas Adam, and he just mentions that our custom is, as we mentioned in the name of the Aruch HaShulchan, that our custom is that that we break the fast right after the chuppah. We don't have to worry about fasting all the way until tzeis or after the chuppah, after tzeis. And he writes that we're not more machmir with this fast than we are when it comes to other fast days, and that's why he says even if the chuppah is happening, let's say it's the winter and the chuppah is not happening until 7:30, so it's been dark already for 2 hours, right? It says that Kochavim was 2 hours ago, so he says he says that you can break your fast even before the chuppah, right? In that kind of a case where the chuppah is late. Let's say you have a 7:30 chuppah in the dead of the winter. I'm not sure what the accepted minhag is. I have to look into what the accepted minhag is here. But he says that if the chuppah is 7:30 at night and Seis HaKochavim was 5:30, he says they can break their fast at 5:30. Right? They don't have to wait until after the chuppah.
Wouldn't it depend on the reason?
Yes. So he says that they can break their fast, but just make sure not to drink any intoxicating beverages. Right? He says because you don't want to get into that problem. But he does say the Chachmas Adam says that that's in his opinion that's certainly fine. I saw in one sefer that they bring that's actually the minhag. So I have to I have to look around a little bit. But it seems that it might be the minhag that if the chuppah is later that you can break your fast already at Seis HaKochavim. Just make sure not to drink anything intoxicating before that time. Okay. So the first thing that we do really at the wedding ceremony, so to speak, is what we call either the Kabbalas Panim or the Chassan's Tish. Right? That's what we have. We have the Kabbalas Panim for the Kala and the Chassan's Tish for the Chassan. Now, interestingly, in this regard, most of the Makoros are all about the Kala. Are all about the Kala. It seems that the minhag that we have of a Chassan's Tish or singing with the Chassan, escorting the Chassan to the Chuppah and things like that. We'll talk about the Badekin in a minute, but it seems that really the focus was always on the Kala. And if you look at the Gemara in Megillah, the Gemara in Megillah in source number 11 brings a brisa that says Mevatlin Talmud Torah lehotzas hameis. The person's allowed to skip learning Torah, right? For a levaya ulahachnasas kala. So what's hachnasas kala? If you think about the terminology for a minute of hachnasas kala, so we're used to hearing that when someone is collecting tzedakah for hachnasas kala, right? That's where we're used to hearing the term. But what does the language mean, hachnasas kala? So Rashi says in Megillah, a little bit later in Megillah, hachnasas kala, what does that mean? L'lavosa mi beis aviha l'beis chupasa. That they used to escort her on the day of the wedding, right? The people would gather, the different sources talk about, the rav of the town and all the chashuva people would gather at the house of the kala, and they would walk the kala, they would escort the kala. Nowadays, you have to drive. Usually where you're going, but in those days they would get married in the local town, so they would walk the kala to the chuppah. So we have this concept of escorting the kala to the chuppah. Now obviously we don't do this anymore. We don't have this. This minhag is kind of we don't practice this. We don't escort. We don't go to the chassan's house or the kala's house before the wedding and escort them to the wedding hall. But what we do nowadays of this Kabbalas Panim or the Chassan's Tish is a me'ain of this minhag. It seems to me this is like the remnant of this minhag that before the chuppah we come to the Chassan and the Kala and we kind of like it's almost like the pregame. We sing with them and when we're happy with them and we wish them Mazel Tov and we get them in an excited mood on the way to doing the chuppah. So it seems to be that's where the minhag came from. It's interesting. Some of the sources actually are very upset because apparently over time people used to escort the chassan and they didn't escort the kala so much. And the drisha, he's going crazy. He says, I don't understand. He says, look at all the sources. They're all talking about the kala. So everybody's worried about the chassan. The kala is the main one to worry about. The chassan, okay, so it's a later minhag that people escort the chassan, but the kala is really the main girl here. So that's really the source of the minhag. It's interesting because the way we have the custom is that during the Kabbalah's panim for the kala, so she sits on this big chair. Right? They always have this big chair, and everyone sits around her. So it's interesting because the chair actually appears in sources. Right? There are makoros for this type of chair. There's a Mishnah in Kalim, already in the times of the Mishnayos, that talks about a kisei shel kala. It was a special kisei. It was a special chair of akala. So there's a mahol machlokas in the Mishnah and Kalim about the, you know, between Beshamai and Beshillel, about tuma and tara, about a kisei of akala. But you see that there is such a thing already in the times of the Mishnayos as a chair of the kala. The kala had a throne. She had a special chair that she used to sit on, and that's really what that's really the source of this. Now, obviously, we know that the kala is going to come to the wedding. She's going to come, you know, all dressed up and made up, and she's going to come, you know, looking beautiful. But they're already there. There are many, many old sources already in the Midrashim, which again is from the times of the Mishnayos. If you look at source number 13, who talk about the fact that the kala is supposed to be beautiful, supposed to be dressed up, supposed to be, you know, as they say in Yiddish, badekt, you know, with you know, just a beautiful kala. So says the Medrash Rabbah in source number 13, Amar Rabbi Simloi, Matzinu Shakadosh Baruch Hu Mevorei Chasanim Umekasheit Kalos. Hakadosh Baruch Hu gives a bracha to the chasan, and he dresses up the kala, right? He beautifies the kala. He gives her, you know, tachshit, and he beautifies the kala, and then also he does other types of chesed, mevaker cholim, kover mesim. He does other types of chesed, but the chesed, when it comes to the chasan, he gives the chasan a bracha, and he gives the kala, he gives her, you know, he makes her beautiful. He beautifies the kala. How do we know that? So the pasuk says, the Medrash quotes the pasuk, "Vayiven Hashem Elokim es Hatzela." That we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu built Chava. Vayiven, he built Chava out of the you know, out of the side of Adam Arishon or wherever it was. So the Medrash says, "What, you know, he was making her beautiful." That's the idea of a kala supposed to be beautiful. Now we know that the kala wears a veil, right? She wears a veil on her head, and we know that the badekin, part of the badekin, after the chasan stesh, we bring the chasan to the kala, and he takes the veil and he covers her head. So it's interesting. There are, you know where this comes from. It seems that the earliest source for such a thing is the pasuk. If you skip to 16 in a minute, we'll come back. But if you skip to 16, so the pasuk says when Rivka came to greet when Rivka came from her home to greet Yitzchak. So the pasuk says, you know, she sees Yitzchak davening in the field, right? So Rivka sees him, and in source number 16, she looks, turns to Eliezer, and she says, "V'tamar el ha'eved, miho ish alazah aleich ba'asadeli krasay." You know, who's this guy? Right, he looks like a very holy person. "V'yomer ha'eved, who adoni?" So Eliezer says, "That's the one. He's the chosen. That's my master. That's Yitzchak." "V'tikach atzoif v'tiskas." So as soon as Rivka sees Yitzchak, what does she do? She takes her scarf. She takes the handkerchief. And she covers herself. She covers her head. She covers her face. She covers herself out of tznius. It seems to me that this is the earliest reference to a kala, you know, covering herself, covering her head, covering her face, for the wedding. The Gemara already talks about in source number 14. The Mishnah, talks about that if a woman im yesh edim sheyatzas behinuma verosha parua. The Mishnah talks about, you know, trying to determine. And again, this is the technicalities of trying to determine. You know, was a woman a besula at the time of her wedding? Was she a be'ula? Does she get 200 for her ksuba? Does she get 100 for her ksuba? Whatever those, whatever the complications there are. But one of the proofs that she was a besula at the time of her wedding is that she yatzas behinuma, that she came out behinuma. So the Mefarshim say, what does behinuma mean? She comes out with a veil. She got married with a veil, verosha parua. Okay, which is interesting because also parua from this language is a language of undoing braids, right? Undoing braids, verosha parua. So some actually have the minhag that under the veil the hair should be undone. It shouldn't be all braided up. But, you know, I think now, you know, we're a little bit makeable with these kind of things. But, you know, could be, I don't know, maybe the Hasidim have different minhagim. But they undo the braid under the veil based on this concept of verosha parua. Rashi says in source number 15 that this kariso, so the kala had a tsa'if al rosha. She had like a handkerchief on her head, Mishurvav al eineha, which hung down over her eyes. Kemosha osim b'mekomein. Rashi says this is the minhag that we have in our place. So we have this concept of a veil, of a head covering, maybe even a face covering at the time of the marriage. And based on that, that's what we do as well. There are different minhagim, obviously, in different circles. You know how thick the veil is. In our circles, generally, it's just a veil, but you can see through it. Obviously, in different circles, it's a much thicker veil where you can't see through it. It really covers the face, but that's different minhagim.
I thought that there was an Indian that there shouldn't be an issue of like a Rachel and Leah.
Right. Right.
It's his heart.
So that's also right. So that right. Correct. Right. 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 But if you think about it, meaning it's not for that reason that he should uncover. He should uncover. Right. So that's why I think that the minhag of covering her face is less from Yaakov and, you know, Rachel and Leah, and more from these sources, the concept of, you know, there's an Indian to cover her head, cover her face, like, you know, I guess from a tznius perspective, as she's getting married, you know, designating herself to this man as opposed to all other men, a certain type of a tzanua statement. But you're right, according to that logic, it should be the opposite. It should be revealed first. Now, maybe that's part of the Badekin, where the chassan actually sees her first. You know, he sees her face uncovered, and then he's the one who covers the face. You know, that might go into that as well.
Oh, yeah. Question
was,
where do we know that he covers her?
Right.
Does all these say that she covered her face before he saw her?
Right, exactly. She covers the face. Right. Yeah, but it could be that's the idea, you know. Maybe also that's the idea of him kind of designating that this is my wife, and, you know, and now she's, you know, previously she could have married anyone, and she's now marrying me, and this is, you know, and this is the way to make that statement. Finally, and with this we'll close tonight, but just the, you know, one beautiful custom that exists is that right before the chuppah, the parents have a custom to give their children a bracha right before the chuppah. You know, now they like to take pictures of it, and, you know, and it's a big deal now for the photographers, but it's really a beautiful, beautiful custom. And here also there's some very, very early sources about this custom. The Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer writes, "Ukechazan shehu omein u'mevarech le'akala besochu pasa." He writes that just like the chazan gets up and gives the kala a bracha under the chuppah, "Kein amdu uberchu es Rivka achosam liyitzchak." He says that's what they did to Rivka. Rivka's family gave her a bracha before she went and went to marry Yitzchak. Shenemar, Vayivarchu es Rivka achosam vayomrula. The pasuk says that they blessed Rivka. What are they blessing Rivka? Before you go to the chuppah, the family should bless the kala. So here, that's where we have this custom today. And there are other sources that indicate this as well, that we have the custom to that the parents give a bracha to the chassan and the kala right before the chuppah. The bracha is generally the classic bracha that we give to our children, Yisimcha Elokim, or Yisimecha Elokim. And then the one for the, you know, boys and one for the girls, and I don't know the one for the girls. You know, my niece was once over for Shabbos Friday night, and I felt like I should give her a bracha. I had to open the bed shirt, you know, to see what the bracha was. But Baruch Hashem. But they generally we give that bracha. Many have the custom to give the bracha. There's a beautiful bracha that I get choked up every Erev Yom Kippur, the one that appears in the Machzor Erev Yom Kippur. So many have the custom to give that bracha. It's a very, very meaningful and special bracha that the parents give their children Erev Yom Kippur, and that's certainly an apropos bracha to give to children, you know, immediately, right before the chuppah, literally, as they're stepping from, you know, from being in your home for all of these years, and in just a few minutes they're going to be starting their own home and their own life with a new person. So many have the custom to give this beautiful bracha as well.
What
yeah.
are they referring to as the bracha of the chazan?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I don't know. Again,
that we don't know about?
This is a Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer. I don't know exactly what the minhag was in those days, but apparently there was some bracha that they used to give. I mean, we have, you know, Baruch Haba and Brucha Haba, which we'll talk about next week. We'll talk about it, you know, a little bit. That we do have a chazan, you know, singing some sort of bracha to the chazan and kala. You know, the Sfardim, they do this much more. I remember my sister married a Syrian. And at the wedding, the first one to walk down the aisle is the chazan. You know, the chazan walks down singing matovu and singing about all these brachos. So, you know, it's different circles. They have different minhagim that people are singing brachos to the chazan and the kala. So presumably it's something along those lines. You know, we have some friend of the chazan singing baruch haba somewhere. But that's our version of the minhag.
So far.
Oh, really? Not by the Syrians, yeah?
Moroccan.
Okay, well, the shofar, why not? You know, whatever. whatever floats your boat. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. And Rez Hashem, next week we'll talk about some more of the minhagim of the actual chuppah.